Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Stephen Spitz. New Mexico's economy continues to struggle even as the national economy recovers. But there is a bright spot, business incubators. Just like the name implies, these organizations help fledgling companies by offering low-cost office space, administrative and technical assistance, and sometimes even funding. The small businesses that have used the 5 certified incubators in New Mexico have created hundreds of jobs over the past decade, but these don't always grab headlines like big corporate hiring announcements. Starting up a small business is difficult. Less than half of startups survive up to 4 years, but those who go through effective incubator programs tend to be more successful. My guests today oversee 2 of these incubators. Tony Gallegos is CEO of the South Valley Economic Development Center in Albuquerque, and Marie Longserre is the president and CEO of the Santa Fe Business Incubator. Marie, I want to start with you. Tell us a little bit about what kinds of services you offer the businesses that come in there.
We're what's classically called in our industry a mixed-use incubator, which means we have some technical companies, some service businesses, a little bit of everything. We do have quite a few technology businesses that are commercializing technology from our universities, colleges, and our national laboratories. I like to think of business incubation and what we offer as startup is sort of a three-legged stool. One part is very obvious. It's the building. It's professional space. It gives the companies a professional front to the world. The space is flexible. They can add in as they grow, so they don't have to rent a whole lot when they're very small and starting out. The second part, and I think this is sort of the meat of business incubation, is blending that physical space with networks, training, mentoring, coaching, all the programmatic portion that we bring together to help the companies get started. And a lot of that we do ourselves right there on site, but we also partner with a lot of other organizations. We build these networks to connect our companies to markets, to sources of capital, and to resources not only in the region statewide, but nationally and internationally as well. A guru in our industry once said that what business incubation is about is reducing risk and isolation. And the interesting thing that happens is that third part, and that's the environment, where there's a lot of peer-to-peer interaction, companies share resources, sometimes employees, and through these interactions, they can come up with even new ideas and new companies, and we've seen that happen across the halls.
Just kind of casual, getting coffee, and you're sort of like, what does your company do? I'm a renewable energy company. What do you do? I'm like, well, you know, I do tax preparation.
We actually had a tax preparer and a woman who did art appraisals do a little roadshow one time about how important it is to have good appraisals if you have any sort of incidents where you have to sell an art collection. And so the two of them formed an unlikely bond, and it was very successful.
You're also bringing on this new biosciences lab.
Yes.
What is that?
We are very excited about this. The federal government granted us $1.25 million, and over the last year, we've been building out one of our garages into a beautiful 800-square-foot bioscience lab, and it not only has core lab capabilities for life science companies and molecular biology, but it has an amazing array of very high-end specific equipment to allow a broad variety of our tenants and people who are thinking about starting a business to come in and use this equipment. And now they don't have to put their valuable startup money toward that facility. We have it for them.
I want to turn to Tony because you have an incubator here in the South Valley of Albuquerque, and it's a fairly different focus than Marie's. It kind of shows how incubators don't come in one flavor, size, or stripe. So talk a little bit about what the focus is of the South Valley Economic Development Center.
Thanks, Megan. What the Santa Fe Incubator and Bioscience Incubator are to high tech, we are to tortillas.
Aren't those high tech? No, I'm just kidding.
But the two things that distinguish us is a commercial kitchen that is core to the incubator. And at any given time, we have between 65 and 70 businesses operating out of that location. And in our office space, in addition to the businesses that we have, we also incubate programs. By and large, what we're doing is setting up a different approach for a different kind of community.
Why take this approach with the commercial kitchen, which I've been down there and it's never quiet? Mm-hmm. There's always someone or more than one company in there making something.
Well, the community that we serve has a very large ethnic diversity. We've got some of the lowest income folks around, and we also have the highest expendable income in the state, according to some.
Now, that is not something most people would think to hear about the South Valley,
right,
quite frankly.
And yet, if you think about it, we have people who have owned land there since even before Santa Fe was established. And these same people give these pieces of land to their children, help them begin homes and so on. If they're doing farming, there's very little need for banks. They don't have to mortgage their homes. They don't have to have credit cards necessarily. There's a very big cash economy in the South Valley. So long story short, it's a different kind of community. And it's a community where, for example, the ATMs in Albuquerque are filled with about $50,000 worth of cash per week. The ATMs in the South Valley are about $1 million per week. It shows a cash economy that's very robust and alive and well.
Who are the people going into your incubator?
We have a high concentration of Hispanic folks from the community. Their socioeconomic levels in many cases are not very high, their educations as well. So what we specialize in is trying to be a starting point for people that are first coming out of their homes. And they're going to capitalize with some terrific recipe that belonged to grandma. And they're going to try to commercialize that, put it together in our test kitchen. And about the time they perfect the equipment and their recipes and get their certification with the environmental health out of the way, we're already beginning to build markets for them. And we provide access to places such as Whole Foods or Costco so that once they have perfected these products, they can actually sell them.
The economic impact for your particular incubator, Tony, had indicated you'd incubated more than 100 businesses and created over 350 jobs and returned about $8.2 million in payroll back to the local economy. Your success rate is four times the national average for an incubator. Why is this model so successful?
I wish I could take more credit than I actually can here, but a lot of this was just trial and error. Many incubators throughout the country focus in on two, three, maybe four or five kitchen operations, and they tie their funding in such a way that once these incubators are making money, they will apportion, maybe through royalties or other agreements, back to the incubator. My thought process was to separate that connection and try to go for as many businesses as possible. And I would find funding through other sources and means. Now, since I operate a community development corporation, I have other funding sources and other programs by which I can rob Peter to pay Paul. So I'm afforded that ability.
Although they pay a fee to use the kitchen, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. But it's a minuscule amount. We started about $13 or $14 an hour. The average is probably $17 or $18 an hour. And this is for state-of-the-art equipment worth well over $1 million.
You can never have that in your house
never,
as a startup.
Never. Okay. And the same kind of operation, for example, in San Francisco or Chicago would be about $150 an hour.
If you're just joining us, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Stephen Spitz, and we're talking about business incubators in New Mexico. My guests are Tony Gallegos, CEO of the South Valley Economic Development Center in Albuquerque, and Marie Longserre, President and CEO of the Santa Fe Business Incubator. Marie, I want to ask you as well the economic impact for the Santa Fe incubator. It said revenues for client companies and affiliates have exceeded $100 million. Payroll generated has been in excess of $40 million, and the client companies and the graduates who've left the nest have created more than 700 direct new jobs. Now, most of those are above the minimum wage or high-paying jobs. They're, since you're high-tech as well, these companies have brought in investment from outside the state.
Absolutely. Millions and millions. It's not all captured there. In fact, that some of those statistics are a couple of years old. Yeah. We're well close to 1,000 jobs now, 140 businesses and enterprises that we've served.
It's such a positive story about job growth in New Mexico, but a lot of people don't know that we have these incubators here. And I'm just wondering, maybe when it's Intel or a large company hiring hundreds of people, that makes a big splash. But you have these really interesting numbers, but I guess it's just a little here, a little there.
Yes.
It flies under the radar?
What's important is the aggregate, and it takes time. And so we're working with the companies at the most vulnerable stage where they're struggling sometimes, and it takes a while. In fact, the job creation really doesn't happen so much in our incubators as it does after they leave our incubators. That's when a lot of the companies grow. A solar installation company called Positive Energy was the second company to ever sign up in our incubator 17 years ago. And it was one person, one man, Alan Sindelar, and his wife helped with the books, and they owned the company. And today, he brought on partners. They've expanded. Of course, they moved out years ago. Today, they have 55 employees, 3 locations around the state. They're the biggest solar installer in the region.
What is it that curtails the high failure rate we usually see for business startups?
I believe it's a combination of things. First of all, we're dealing with people who really want to learn and grow and take advice, and they seek new ideas, and they're very entrepreneurial, and we screen for that when they come to us. But I believe when they're put in a situation like this, in this type of environment, and they have this peer applause and help and support, a lot of times people are trying to start their company and they're doing it in a vacuum. And nobody's celebrating it and say, keep going, because it's very difficult. And sometimes people just stop.
Megan, in response to your earlier question, but leads into this, you'll have to pardon me. I'm known for stating the obvious. But while many governmental entities are out chasing large companies to relocate here, we are working with those folks that already exist here. Some have started, some are about to start. We're under the radar because this is a consistent job development. This is not 1,000 jobs all of a sudden coming into the community, and all the politicians are out there to grab the headline and kiss the babies. This is, I use the analogy of the minute hand on the clock that is consistently moving, but you don't see it move until you look back and see that it's traveled. A good example would be a governmental entity offering a TID or a TIF for someone to locate into the South Valley.
That's a tax increment finance district,
right,
or development district.
But
yeah,
by the time they make their money back on that tax benefit, they would have paid those employees the first 10 years of their existence. Often we run into a clawback situation where someone has failed and there's monies that have changed hands, and what do we do now to recoup the money that we offered? So again, while other people are looking for big wins and in many cases failing because it's hard to attract businesses, and especially in communities such as mine, I could never get an Intel to locate in the South Valley. I have to work with what I have. And this consistent movement does add up, as Marie was mentioning, in aggregate. And it's when you look at these numbers at the end of the month or the end of the year or the end of 5 years.
I want to go back a minute to the idea of, who are the people coming in and how do you make sure that they're the right fit and they're ready for what you have to offer?
It's a pretty low barrier to entry in our incubator. If they have a good idea, we work with some people at the very early stages of ideation, and we do have people come to us at that stage, and we're adding programs and working with partners all the time to have a blend of resources for them at that stage. Generally, they don't want to sign a lease and move into the incubator until they're at a point where they can financially obligate themselves to that. So I've worked with some people for 1 or 2 years, working with them with our staff and our partners like the Small Business Development Centers and SCORE and the microlenders and West and so forth to get to the point where they're ready to get out of the garage or at home or the dining room table and come into a commercial environment like this. I sometimes think of it as sort of like a halfway house where it's safe and there's a lot of help and so forth. It's not the shock of going right into a, you know, long-term lease in a large commercial place. I so appreciate what Tony said about this is an economic development tool. And, you know, you mentioned earlier how we're all different, and I think that's part of the success of business incubation is it reflects the community that we're in and the particular assets and aspects and aspirations of that community.
And, Tony, what is the process if someone wants to come be in the South Valley Incubator? What kind of bar do they need to meet?
Well, the best thing they can do is not talk to me. Because I am the world's worst predictor of what's going to work. And this is not far from the truth. I've had someone come in that wanted to produce a margarita mix and a mojito mix with organic materials. And my thought immediately went to organics and alcohol. Just doesn't seem to make sense. Well, these ended up in the surprise bags for the Grammy Awards, for the MTV Awards, and later the Academy Awards. That particular maker, Bonitas Mixes, went from Albuquerque to New Mexico to Southwest to National in 8 months. What I like about the food industry and my particular business incubator is that people can determine how far do I want to take this. If it's just grandma employing a few of her grandkids or mom and pop with their family, they can stop at that level. And you can make a good living supplying food for only 20 local grocery stores. But if you do want to go statewide or national, the opportunity is there. And, of course, the investment and the process is a little bit different. Through the other portion of my Community Development Corporation, we've actually started a separate entity called Delicious New Mexico, which is a branding program by which we're taking these people to the next ratcheted step where they enter into co-packing relationships and wider distributions. The typical person comes in at about $2,000, and most of that is to cover their insurance, their specialized equipment and the early portions of experimental foodstuffs that they need. We don't even charge at that point while they're experimenting and learning the equipment. But the minute that they're certified by the Environmental Health Department and they're clear to sell to the public, that's when we begin charging and that's when they begin growing.
What determines when someone can leave? Or when they should leave?
Megan, it depends upon the company itself and the industry they're in. Ultimately, we work that out with each company individually. They know when they come in, there's a goal to leave. We raise the rent every year, and the leases are not very long, so that we work with them toward a successful exit of the incubator as being a success. And you know what happens then? They move out. Normally right into the community, not far from the incubator. And so not only, I mean, Tony was talking about attraction and we're talking about incubation as creation of companies, but the retention levels in business incubation is very high because these are people based in the community. They've come from the community and they likely want to stay right there. They've got their investors here. They've got their employees here. So some of our companies have located within 1 to 5 miles of the incubator when they've moved out.
And studies have shown that even if they do go statewide or national, that they'll still set up their home base here. There's several reasons that this is smart, but I think by far the biggest is the fact that we are putting all our efforts into our own people for locally grown businesses. And these people are going to stay, and it's not earth-shaking. You're not going to see a lot of hoopla in terms of opening events and hundreds of jobs. But when you look at especially the statewide impact, you'll see that that is a steady increase as opposed to all of those wining and dining excursions all over the world trying to convince somebody to come here.
Do the incubators get state money?
Yes and no.
Okay.
We have in the past, and this particular year we will again. But there has not been any consistent funding by any one source, at least in my case.
If you're just joining us, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Stephen Spitz, and we're talking about business incubators in New Mexico. I'm here with Tony Gallegos, CEO of the South Valley Economic Development Center, and Marie Longserre, President and CEO of the Santa Fe Business Incubator. Obviously, you have a higher success rate than just businesses starting on their own, but not everyone makes it.
No.
What are some of the factors that go into a business failing?
There are so many. I have to tell you that particularly with technology companies, there's a big barrier if they can't get the capital that they need. Getting over that the very early stage money into the next level of funding that they need. And it's been particularly difficult since the economic downturn a few years ago, but I think it's coming back. Some of the companies will sell or license their technologies, and therefore they will kind of leave in a way, except that all the talent stays here. So I have some companies in our incubator that the founders are working on their second, third, or even fourth business.
The serial entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Not Cheerios, but other kinds of cereal.
My average kitchen business will stay about 18 months. When they're producing $250,000 to $300,000 worth of product per year, it's time for them to leave.
Talk about that formula you help people understand, Tony. They're coming in. They've got grandma's salsa recipe, or they want to make the best tortilla on the planet.
Okay.
But there's more to a successful business than that, right? You can have an awesome product.
But I can't tell people how to make a better tortilla. That's what they're coming in with as subject matter experts. What we can teach is how do we put together a business plan? How do we do your accounting and taxes? What about the distribution? What about the marketing? Labor costs, cost per unit, all of these things that folks just coming in are not going to be thinking about and frankly are the biggest reasons for their failure. It's not that the tortilla didn't taste good. Whatever you put into that product, you've got to charge three times that amount per unit in order to make it. So if you're going to sell a tortilla, a dozen tortillas for $3, you better not spend more than a dollar in making it.
You also incubate programs. These are nonprofits.
Nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And if I can incubate them first as fledglings within my organization and then later form coalitions and collaborative efforts where we then support each other, ultimately the funding sources as well as the individual organizations are all happy because we're getting better bang for the buck. And guess what? As they grow, they create new jobs too.
Before we end, I want to ask you if people are listening and thinking, oh, I've got a business idea. Maybe I should try to be in one of these incubators. What's your advice?
We'd be happy to visit with anyone. And if they're not ready for a space in an incubator, but they need help with their cash flow or they need help doing their market research, knowing the right fit for them at the place and stage where they are is something that we can offer to connect them not only with us if they're ready for the business incubator, but with all the other resources. And which brought me to something I thought about when Tony was talking is how all the incubators in the state work together. He has such amazing connections in the food industry and agriculture that when I have somebody come to us up in Santa Fe who's working with something that I think Tony's program could help with, that's the referral. Over in Farmington, they have manufacturing and oil and gas. Down in Las Cruces, aviation and other material sciences. And the West Incubator, also here in Albuquerque, media. They have an amazing new media room and studio there. So all of us have unique capabilities. So whatever the idea is, I think people would be amazed to know how many resources there are to encourage and help somebody who wants to run their own business.
And I'll put a list of those on the website for New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. Tony, what do you tell people when they think, well, I might be able to do this?
Well, let me warn you that me and one of my other colleagues are known as the Dr. Kevorkians of economic development. My thought process is really quite simple. When someone is seeking to start a business and they come to talk to us, there's going to be a percentage that just don't fit. It's true in our kitchen. We have an orientation there of 25 people every month, and only 3 trickle into the kitchen per month. And that's about the rate that we graduate people per month. So it stays a steady 65 to 70 in there. I almost hate to see the economy come back because I was a real popular guy there for a while.
As people lost their jobs?
Yeah. You know, everyone was reporting bad news. And as people were losing their jobs and couldn't find other jobs, I was reminded of the Great Depression, where people got very creative and they started new businesses. As the economy got worse and worse, my kitchen got more and more busy. The tested and true thing is to take an idea far enough along and make whatever mistakes that you need to until you ultimately succeed, and then you'll make a living at it.
That's beautiful. I so agree. I've had people that we turn down come back and say, thank you so much. I would have taken all the money Aunt Mabel left to me, and I would have failed. And when you asked the right questions and sent me to the right resources and you helped me look at my business plan, I realized that this is not going to meet my goals. The people that scare me the most are the ones who walk in and say, I'm going to start my own business so I can have it easy, so I can tell the man where to stick it because I'm not going to work all the time. I'm going to have a vacation. And I suggest they sit down and we talk a little bit at that point, because starting your own business has really little to do with vacation. We try and encourage people to occasionally take a day off now and then.
Megan, I would be remiss if I didn't compliment my partner here. When I started in this business, I didn't know how to spell incubation. She has been a mentor not only to me, but I think to all of the other folks here in New Mexico, and just a wealth of information.
I think one of the most exciting things to come out of the economic downturn is that now globally there's focus on entrepreneurship, there's focus on small business growth, and how important that is to communities. And I would say no matter what happens as we come back, that is a shift that has refocused a lot of attention exactly where I think it should be.
Unfortunately, we have to go. But you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Stephen Spitz, and my guests have been Tony Gallegos, he's CEO of the South Valley Economic Development Center here in Albuquerque, and Marie Longserre, President and CEO of the Santa Fe Business Incubator. And I will have more resources posted online with this segment at KUNM.org. Thanks so much for being here. Thanks for listening.